It's Thursday, July 16th, 2015, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, a show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 111, Murder Golf. Runtime for this episode is 1 hour and 12 minutes. Hello and welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast that remembers that weird Marines recruitment commercial from the 90s where the Marine scaled the cliff and fought the Balrog. My name is Jeremy.
I completely forgot about that commercial, but that would definitely make me join the Marines if I had read Lord of the Rings slightly earlier. I'm Tyler.
I don't think I ever actually saw that commercial.
It's weird because it's pre the Lord of the Rings movies, so I didn't know it was just like this weird fire demon. I'm like, pretty sure the Marines don't fight weird fire demons or fight with their sabers, even though I was like 8. And then when I watched Lord of the Rings, I knew what to call that thing.
Well, we should ask Chris. He'll have some experience to know whether or not they actually do fight Balrogs.
That's actually one of their training exercises.
Probably. Like the advanced guys, they get dropped in the Serengeti with stakes draped over them. I asked Devin about that. He said, yeah, that sucked.
Stakes?
Yeah.
Like meat?
Yeah. What? Then they get chased by lions. That way they're fast enough to replace your battery on time.
Yeah, that seems like way too much money to spend training people.
They're very dedicated. And finally, my name is Zach.
Can you just shoot the lions?
No, because then they don't chase you.
Yeah, that's the point. If they're not chasing you, they're no longer a danger.
They're either doing that, or they push them out of a plane with a car and say change the battery midair before you hit the ground.
The car has a parachute.
You get your parachute.
The dead battery has a parachute inside.
No, you get your parachute. Once you get the dead battery out, you get your parachute.
Man, remember the Power Rangers movie and how it starts with them skydiving for no reason?
I forgot about that.
And then they roller skate for no reason.
What's the name of the villain in that? It's like Zog.
Ivan Ooze.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
I didn't remember that. I just remember the opening.
He's purple. That's really all I remember about him.
I remember him because I was always grossed out by him as a kid and didn't like the Power Rangers movie because of that. Despite it having Johnny Yong Bosch having the best, like, improv line ever.
Oh?
I'm a frog.
What?
They get ninja animal powers, and he's a ninja animal is a frog. And so he's like, Adam, why don't you sit down? I'm a frog. Which he improvised, and they're like, yep, keeping it.
I wonder what the original line was supposed to be.
I have no idea.
I forgot that was supposed to be a transition to the new source material.
Kind of, and also kind of not.
How is it kind of not?
I mean, because they redo it in the... It's
actual
not canon.
Show.
Oh, okay.
And also, they don't use any source material for the movie. They all CGI. Also, to save money, they shot episodes of Power Rangers while shooting that movie.
Wow.
Yeah. There was no money paid for Power Rangers. There was no budget. You know, Doctor Who got a shoestring and an actor. Power Rangers did not.
And an actor.
Well, of course Doctor Who didn't get any money. The insurance costs for Top Gear are insane.
That is true. Did they even bother to pay? Like, who would insure Top Gear?
Somebody does.
I mean, they threw Jeremy Clarkson into the cold winter, so maybe people are more willing. Maybe people are more willing now.
Huh?
Jeremy Clarkson is not. His contract isn't being renewed. And so the other two guys aren't going to do it either. I think Netflix has hinted that they're going to give them a car show, but
coincidentally, the guy who played Jon Snow's contract did get renewed. So.
Yeah, well, they keep saying, no, he's totes dead, but we'll see.
But they hired the actor again, so...
And they've only had one flashback in the entire series.
That's actually, they're hiring actors who play Daenerys' older brother for the beginning of next season. So presumably they're going to do a flashback to before Robert's Rebellion.
Maybe.
Or during Robert's Rebellion, I guess.
I mean, yeah, there's plenty of stuff there that would be good to show.
Like... Jon Snow's birth.
Yeah, and there's a pretty good setup for how that would be seen. But we'll see. And, you know, and maybe we won't. Maybe Jon Snow is going to be mega dead. Maybe they renewed his contract so they could stab swords in his corpse while lighting him on fire and throwing him off the wall.
But they need to have a burial.
There's also the rumor that he will be the new White Walker boss.
Oh, I'd be totally down with that, actually. That's pretty cool.
We'll see. I mean, like I said, I just read everything that happened in the books. Because we're pretty much there, so
I'm privy to a lot of the book people theories, and they've had like 3 years to come up with random theories that have had like 2 weeks.
They also didn't drop the prophecy in the show yet, still.
Yeah.
So I don't even know this stuff because I don't read the books.
The dragon must have 3 heads.
Okay.
Anyway, what have we been playing? I haven't been playing anything except for the assignment and a game to compare to the assignment. So go me. I'll talk about those later.
I've been playing a fair amount of Smash. So Zero, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's one of the top players in Smash 4 right now.
Yeah, I've heard a little bit about him.
I stumbled across a video he did that was a compilation of him trying to play on Online for Glory through the entire roster without losing. So just one match per person per character.
Okay, and if he lost, he started over? Or
yep.
Okay.
And it took him like an hour and 20 minutes, which is pretty damn impressive, first of all. He had to start over once at character number 7, which I think is Bowser Jr., I think.
Okay.
So I've been trying to do that, having been inspired by that, and I have made it all the way down to Sheik. And
so that's
lost.
Like double digits.
Yep. Yeah, and then I lost and had to start over again. So I usually get up to Peach and go, "Ah, why is my Peach so terrible?" And then I get to Wario and I'm like, "Ah!" And yeah, okay.
Very good, Zach. What have you been playing?
League of Legends.
What?
Yeah. Well,
when did you start playing that?
Yeah, fairly recently. I know it's fairly new. I should probably spend a lot of time talking about it, like the next 20 or so minutes. And then I was also playing some Dynasty Warriors 8 Empires.
Still enjoying that?
Yes.
What sweet officers did you have? Did you recruit Lu Bu to be your sweet second-in-command?
No.
Did you recruit Zhao Yun to be your sweet second-in-command?
Do you get it?
No, I usually just play Gathering of Heroes and end up with a bunch of random people thrown in there.
How does Dynasty Warriors 8 work?
He's playing Empire specifically, which is a spinoff that most of the Dynasty Warriors numbers have. Empires has a bunch of turn-based strategy elements thrown in, where you have sort of a turn-based strategy game going on, and then when you start the actual battles, you play Dynasty Warriors.
Oh, that sounds a lot like that one mode in Soul Calibur.
A little bit, but...
No? Okay.
You get, like, your officers will give you, like, plans that you can execute that cost money, and those can be either give you advantages in combat or, like, form alliances with other factions or seek out new cool guys to be your sweet bros.
This one's actually a little bit different from the ones that came before. It's got... Did you ever play 8? I'm assuming 8 has some of the similar mechanics.
I played
8,
but I might have. I can't remember if I played 7 or 8. Which is the last one you owned?
I think it was 6 or 7.
It was 7. Yeah, I did play 8.
It was terrible.
Yeah, 7 is the terrible one. I did play 8.
But... Well, because they changed the combat.
The
combat was never that deep, but they changed it so they took out any depth it had.
Yeah, they just made it so your attacks, you can attack infinitely, so you just wade into people, hit X until they're all dead, and...
This one they actually changed around so that all weapons had... Like, it's a rock, paper, scissors triangle like Fire Emblem has with, you know, lances beat swords, swords beat axes, axes beat lances.
Oh, really?
But they have Heaven, Man, and Earth, and each one of them has...
Yeah,
each weapon has a affiliate type, and they're strong against one and weak against one. And every character has 2 weapons that they can carry. Like, you can change them as going.
This is all sounding familiar now that you say
it. So, they actually made combat a lot... Just adding that makes it a little bit deeper, so you have to actually pay attention. Oh, did they... Okay, they're strong against me. I should switch now.
Yeah, Hyrule Warriors has something kind of like that.
That doesn't... Yeah, it
that
does kind
make
of
sense.
So,
given that it's made by the same people.
Yeah.
And it was after this game. And then they also added the fact that you can deploy strategies. Just... You have a strategy bar.
Okay.
Like, you have your...
we have full strategy. We must deploy our strategy now.
Well, like... So each strategy requires different amounts. Like, Unity heals you and any officers near you, which is fantastic.
Do you do it in combat?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a lot better.
Yeah, you can...
Strategies were something that was a cool idea that they never really got right.
Yeah, because you can hit R and it'll pull up the strategies that you have equipped, and you can equip like 5 or 6 of them. Some of them are like large scale. Like, one of mine that I use a lot is Covering Fire, which for like 30 seconds or something like that, or longer than that, the entire enemy force takes damage. But it takes like a minute and a half to set up. So like 2 of your officers will retreat from the field to set it up. There's a lot of cool things with that.
Sounds good.
They added some of the other things, like your character can get married to other characters and swear sibling vows with other characters.
Sibling vows were in Empire 6.
I didn't know if they were in it, but...
Is that like a defensive pact?
No, like you and one of your officers, and it'll let you use your most powerful skill. Or your most powerful, like, move style attack is what they're called. I can't think of how to better describe it. It's basically your signature move does... bucket loads of damage. And
Sworn Brothers is kind of like a thing in Asia, you know.
Yeah.
That pretty much originates from the story of Liu Bei, Guan Yu, and
Zhang Fei,
who are major characters in Dynasty Warriors.
And the Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
Yeah. And the source material, yes. I mean, that's like one of the big moments in Romance of the Three Kingdoms is they're swearing, yo, we're brothers now, and we're going to beat up people. And then they do. And then Liu Bei, the people love him, so he becomes Emperor of Shu, but he's not Cao Cao, so he dies.
Yeah, pretty much.
And his son sucks.
And each one of them has, every character has three, like, Musou attacks, which in previous games you only had one. And there are, you know, one is you have to hold the button to switch weapons, and then you hit the Musou button and it'll do one, which is usually single target, I think. Then you have an aerial one, and then you just have the standard one. Yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with it. It's Dynasty Wars. It's basic. It's hack and slash. It's how many guys can I kill in this span of time? We're not talking deep into any immersive gameplay here, but it's fun. I mean, on Sunday I played a bunch of it, and I looked up at the clock and went, it's 7?
Yep.
And I did that with Hyrule Warriors a while ago. We're like, how did we manage to spend 3 hours doing this?
I mean, solid games. They do get boring after a while if you just keep playing them, in my opinion, but they go for a while, and especially Empires, which adds a metagame to keep you interested, to switch between, you know, you get through with the combat, and then you do the out-of-combat stuff, and usually by the time you're done, you're cooled down enough for another fight.
Well, in this one, they also changed it so that your characters get tired the more they fight.
So you want to switch between characters?
So you can switch between characters, and there's also abilities that will let you heal them and whatnot, but it encourages kind of switching between your characters.
And then they had different scenarios, or at least they did in past Empires games, with younger characters and different starting terrain divvy-ups. Divvy-ups, that's a word, right?
Yep.
Divvy-ups.
And, well, like I said, I tend to use the Gathering of Heroes, which is different every time. Yeah,
that's
but
basically the free play mode. Right?
Yeah, where custom officers appear and all that stuff, but I also like making custom officers for some reason. And this game, there's a lot of customization options in it. But like,
that guy has a sweet hat.
Well, you can make a war horse, soldiers, a banner. Like, you can make a lot of stuff just to customize your nation. Like, yes, this is mine. Not really sure.
Everyone fly the proud banner of Dick Butt.
No, the nation of Xeon. Come on. Sig Xeon.
That's a resource. That's how I cast my spells. I use Xeon.
You colony drop them.
Yeah, cast colony drop.
That's a spell.
Colony drop,
duh.
Yeah. It's actually just meteor.
Well, speaking of colony drops and sci-fi stuff, we should probably get to our assignment for the week, which was Halo Combat Evolved.
Unseal the hushed casket.
You know, I always used to make fun of the name Combat Evolved, but this really is a different game from a lot of its predecessors.
Well, and Bungie didn't want to put it on there. Microsoft insisted because they felt like their competing games like Call of Duty and Medal of Honor had all this combat stuff, and people wouldn't know Halo meant first-person shooting. Well, it's weird by today's standards, but imagine the pre-Halo world. It wasn't that long ago.
It's strange that people would think that Halo doesn't mean the first-person shooter, but then when I think about it, that it actually does make a certain amount of sense because it's a new IP and it doesn't scream first-person shooter and it doesn't necessarily look
good. Didn't they advertise it as a first-person shooter?
The cover is a guy in armor with a gun. It looks like a first-person shooter to me.
That could have been a Metal Gear
original cover.
No, it's like the Master Chief pointing the assault rifle.
Yeah, it is.
At you, the purchaser.
Buy or
Why
I shoot.
Did you buy this game?
Buy or I shoot. You bought an Xbox. This is the only game you need.
It was the Halo box. That was the joke for a long time.
Well, because the Xbox really never had another game up to this level of, especially of cultural impact, and had very few games that were this quality.
Which is actually kind of funny that it didn't have one of the main selling points implemented in it. This game never had online multiplayer.
Really surprised about that, but
not never did.
Well, and it ends up becoming their mascot, which works for them way better than Sonic the Hedgehog works for Sega, even though it's the same basic strategy of, look at us, we're not those old guys. We're hip and cool, and our console looks like Mountain Dew. It has an X, like X Games.
And you need to be a giant to hold our controller.
Or a bear.
Giant controller may be included.
We're sorry.
You buy an Xbox as a box, you know, about 2 feet wide by 2 feet long. Well,
just
then next to it is like a 3 foot by 3 foot box with the controller.
But enough about the Xbox, the console it's on. I suppose this is the first Xbox game we've played, so it's worth going into a little.
Well, it makes sense.
It was Microsoft's attempt to enter the console market. They wanted to be aggressive. They wanted to be new. They wanted to be different. Very similar to what Sega did with Sonic, but they were at a more appropriate time to do it because games were starting to change. You were starting to get an old enough market of video gamers that you could market to an 18-plus crowd and be okay, even though most of your sales are going to be 14-year-olds who are sneaking in.
Well, they came in hard charging with, I think, like the big three I can think of that were around that time frame when they first released it was Halo, Mech Assault, and Crimson Skies. And Crimson Skies and Mech Assault
both had
online multiplayer, which was something that wasn't done. You didn't have online multiplayer.
You did
a
if
console.
You had a Dreamcast. Remember the Dreamcast?
No, because no one had a Dreamcast.
My rich friend did. Who wasn't really my friend. He was just a guy I knew and my mom made me hang out with.
Yeah, sometimes we're the same. Look at the gaming landscape that it had to compete with. I mean, there were shooters on the PC, but for console gamers, it was mostly platformers and JRPGs at that time.
And most of the shooters that the consoles did have were clunky and difficult to control.
Despite that,
Perfect Dark
sold very, very well and were met with critical acclaim. So they really hit with the right type of game at the right time. And Bungie did a good job of making a first-person shooter that would really work on a console and maybe wouldn't have worked on a PC. Maybe it would have. They did port it to PC later, but I don't know how different it was. And they do a good job of getting you ready for a controller. They give you look sensitivity, which helps with how much slower it is to scan the room without a mouse. They give you an auto aim that doesn't really aim for you, but kind of follows once your reticle is over a target, which really helps with tracking, something that Metroid Prime will do just a little bit later.
The first couple minutes of this game I found were awesome for acquainting you with the control scheme.
Where you're just running through, not actually trying to shoot anything?
Even before you do that.
Oh, the
waking him up from the chamber.
I think that goes a little long. The waking up and looking around is good, and then the, hey, do you want your view inverted or not? That's good, but let's test your energy shield. At that point, I think it's getting to be a little too long.
Although that enforces the fact that you have a shield and it will recharge, which is new at the time.
Yes,
no one's done that.
Okay, let's talk about Halo's combat mechanics, because they're very new, very different, and they are the core of the game.
The core of every game that followed it.
I mean, Call of Duty doesn't have shields.
No, but it has regenerating health. It's the same idea.
Does it? Oh, it does. I forgot. Ew.
How did you... Wow. But
like, every game does after that. I completely forgot about that. Because it's not shields.
Every game has what, fancy people will call a core gameplay loop, which is what you keep doing over and over to play the game. We were just talking about Dynasty Warriors earlier, about how you just fight guys, and Halo lives and dies on its combat, because that is the loop.
It's a good thing it's good combat, then.
You can only carry two guns, which, again, is good on a controller, because you don't have as many quickly accessible buttons to switch between different types of guns.
It's always a problem in other games when you play them on console, where you have,
12
guns.
Weapons.
I need to get out a specific gun, so now I gotta cycle through and hope I don't die while I'm trying to get to it. Whereas this
and
one,
as a
you
result,
just have two.
Many games since have only had a primary, a secondary, and a melee, essentially.
And I actually kind of wish we'd go to a four-gun paradigm on controllers, because we have this little D-pad not doing much, and I think that's fine to reach for. But that's not Halo's fault, really. That's everybody copying Halo's fault.
Well, there are a bunch of games nowadays, which we're not talking about, that actually do use the D-pad for weapon switching.
Yeah.
Gears of War.
Yeah, Gears is, that's the one thing I like about Gears of War, is the way weapon select works.
Now the thing about Call of Duty is, the big one right now, and
it's two guns.
It's a two-gun system.
But anyway. Yep.
Well, the other thing that I wanted, you also have grenades in this game.
Yeah.
But converse to, the games we've played before, grenades are just something you can use.
Yeah, they're their own buttons, and you pick them up all the time in this game, so you're going to want to be using them a lot. You also, the other big thing, as we've alluded to but haven't really explained, is shields. Instead of previous shooters where you have a health bar or number,
and you have to pick up a health pack to regenerate it.
You still have that in this game, but it's a very small number. I think you have 6 health total, and it's little blips instead of a number, because 6 isn't very high.
And they're not real clear on how many hits you can
from take.
Yeah.
It varies from weapon to weapon, but in general, human weapons are better against your health bar. Covenant weapons are better against your shields.
We should save that for when we get to weapons, because we will be talking about those. Like I said, I think the core of Halo's gameplay is revolutionary and important enough to just focus on that in abstract. And the shields that we keep alluding to without explaining. You have a bar of shields that goes down as you take hits. When you spend time not getting hit, it's about probably 10, 15 seconds in this one. It always feels longer because you're in tense combat situations, but it's probably about that long. Your shield starts to recharge to full. Once your shields are down, you start taking health hits, which are more serious. And obviously, if you run out of health, you die. Another important thing that's not quite combat, but that I think is very important to Halo, is the checkpoint systems. The checkpoints in this game are incredibly generous, which is really just streamlining the PC shooter thing of quick load and quick save. But yeah, they're taking the buttons out, which is very important on a console where you don't want to have to map buttons to quick save and quick load.
Or having to pause the game constantly, go to quick save, wait for the save, and then go on. It just does it.
Well, especially because you won't know exactly when you're about to walk into a position where you actually need to quick save, and you find out, well, I need to quick save there, and you're about 2 hours behind where you should have been. Because there's no checkpointing.
So, like I said earlier, you only have two weapons, and I want to get into the implication of that. And grenades, which do kind of feature as a third weapon since they're so prevalent. Because you only have two weapons, you're going to be switching a lot, because the game is not super generous with ammunition. You will get some ammo drops, but not nearly what you get in an older first-person shooter.
What guns were you using that you were having a problem with ammo?
Pistol, assault rifle.
Yeah, I never ran out of ammo for anything.
Really? I was running out of ammo all the time in this game. Shotgun later on. But shotgun, once the floods show up, you have like an ammo delivery system to you. The first six levels of the game aren't so much like that.
The pistol is not a very good gun in campaign.
It's good against grunts, but that's about it, because you can dome grunts.
It's great on the autumn.
Isn't that the only weapon you get?
Well, no, you also pick up an assault rifle. You could also pick up a plasma pistol if you really wanted one.
Or plasma rifle. They're both available on that map.
Well, since we keep talking about it, let's go through the guns and explain their use. Probably the most common gun in campaign is the assault rifle. It's your basic machine gun.
It's bread and butter. It's your main gun. You go to that, and you're probably going to be carrying it for a long time. You see him every time it's a cutscene, it's got the assault rifle.
Yep.
It's pretty much like a machine gun in any other FPS. It's got a pretty long clip, and it has a huge number of total ammo, which is nice.
60 shots. Actually, they all have, I think, the same amount of total shots, or total clips. And since the assault rifle has 60 shots, that means 600 rounds.
Yep. And it's a pretty decent mid to close range weapon.
Then you get the pistol, which doesn't really play like a pistol in other games. It plays more like a mid-range sniper weapon. Sniper doesn't imply mid-range, but it's got a lot more stopping power than the standard pistol. And it's got a scope, which is really important for when you engage at mid-range.
Closer to like a marksman's rifle, which is why they changed in later games. They made
it the battle rifle.
Battle rifle or designated marksman rifle, which they added in Reach.
Which I feel like takes away a little bit from the sci-fi of the game. Like, I like that the pistol doesn't work like a pistol in our modern times. It helps emphasize that this is the future.
We have great pistols, bro.
Yeah, well, and also one of the things this game really gets right is weapon balance. All of the weapons feel like they have their uses.
Exactly.
Zach was saying that the pistol isn't very good, but when you're fighting grunts and jackals, which are kind of the main enemies, it's really good, and it has sort of not a ranged advantage against the elites, but if you're at optimal pistol range, their weapons aren't good at retaliating.
Yeah, but on the higher difficulties, you're going to take too long to punch through their shields.
Well, even on the lower difficulties, that's often true, but you can get in a few shots. Then there's the shotgun. You don't really get it until later in the game.
And it's great for the totally not zombies yet to fight.
Well, we'll get to that. it's very, very effective close range, like most shotguns, but I feel like more so. Because like
it's a one-hit kill if you aim it right, even at full shield.
In Half-Life, for example, the shotgun is much more effective up close, but it is effective at long range, too. Whereas in this game, the shotgun, you really want to be up close, and it's pretty much going to be a one-hit kill, except for the tougher elites.
You want to be shoving it down their throat. It won't kill the gold ones.
No, or the silver ones.
But it's a good video game shotgun, is the moral of the story, because it doesn't do a whole lot from distance. So you kind of you have to balance that with a better ranged weapon if you're going to carry it.
Then there's the sniper rifle. It's very high amount of stopping power. Kills most of the elites in one hit. The tougher ones it won't, and you need headshots on the higher difficulties. The problem that it has very limited ammo.
Except on the Truth and Reconciliation, which it gives you a lot because that's a sniper level.
Yeah, and it's completely useless against the not-zombies, which is frustrating.
It goes straight through them, won't do a single... Well, it'll hurt them. Eventually you can kill them with it, but it's not worth it.
I spent 16 shots on one. They all strung true, and it didn't kill them.
I've never sat down and fired that many rounds.
I was mostly testing, because I was like, does this actually not hurt them, or do I suck? And turns out, no, it doesn't hurt them.
I thought it still hurt them. It just took too many shots.
Yeah, I've managed to kill one with it.
Well, I mean, it might be possible, but I was unsuccessful.
I was also playing on normal because I'm a noob, so.
Then you have the rocket launcher. Works like a rocket launcher in most games. Very powerful. You mostly want to use it as anti-vehicle just because the rockets move slowly enough that the smarter enemies will get out of the way.
Well, you're going to quick pick it up, use it to clear a room, and then drop it because you have no shots for it.
Yeah. It is really fun to watch if you're on the receiving end of it. Like, watch the rocket, like, slowly meander towards you.
That's all the human weapons, right? I can't think of any others.
Well, the grenades do have a little bit of a difference. So the human frag grenades bounce a lot more. They have a bigger wide. Well, the Covenant ones will bounce, but they'll bounce more. They have a bigger splash radius. They go off faster.
They're generally better for flushing people out from around corners.
The problem with the human grenades is you get very few of them, whereas, especially compared to the Covenant grenades,
where you're
which
just
are
swimming in them, you're like, okay, I got a box of grenades just following me around.
So then the three Covenant weapons, the plasma pistol, which works basically like the gun from Metroid, specifically the Super Metroid version. You can fire it quickly in rapid succession, and it will kind of stun guys, or you can charge it up. The full charge version takes out shields in one hit.
One important thing to keep in mind with the plasma pistol and plasma rifle, this isn't true for them either, they don't have clips. If you fire them too much, they'll overheat and you'll have to wait for them to cool down. And you have a hundred battery. It's not quite 100 shots.
And you can't pick up spare batteries. You have to just throw your current gun and pick up the new
fresh one. Doesn't the plasma pistol consume like 12 or some odd amount for a
fully
charged shot?
It's like 11 for a fully charged blast. And you can actually, if you have less shots than it would normally cost, you can still fire a fully charged plasma pistol blast.
I thought it wouldn't charge up all the way.
The plasma pistol has its uses, especially against the tougher enemies taking out their shields, but it's very slow at killing an enemy with no shields. And since grunts and jackals have no shields to start with,
it's insanely good against taking down sentinels.
Yeah.
But the plasma rifle is just a better gun general.
Then there's the plasma rifle, which is basically the
it's a bigger,
rifle,
better
but
version of the plasma pistol. Doesn't charge, but it fires faster so you can cut down
and does
enemies.
More damage per hit.
Does more damage per hit and is more useful against unshielded targets as well.
Then you have the Needler, which is one of the most interesting concepts for a gun.
But it is the most worthless gun in the game.
I mean, I disagree, but
it's
not very good.
In multiplayer, I think it's the...
No, it's in single player, it is also the needles. So this gun has travel time on its projectiles.
That's true.
You can dodge them. To do any real damage, you have to stack a lot of needles, and eventually they will explode.
Well, the way
this
they
in
work
and of itself is a problem because it will set off grenades near the target. And they
will
just
on the ground
chain damage. I have, at one point, killed targets with a needler and then died halfway across the room because the grenades all went off.
Yeah, but I've done that with grenades, too, and I would not call grenades useless. The way the needler works, since it wasn't really explained, it's a rapid-fire weapon. The projectiles move slowly, but they have a little bit of homing. And when enough stick into a target, they will explode.
Does it do anything if enough don't stick? Because
it does damage per hit, but the problem is the damage is minuscule without it exploding.
Okay.
So you need to stack a lot of shots onto the target, by which point you could have either just outright killed it with an assault rifle or plasma rifle.
It's honestly one of my favorite Covenant weapons to pick up. A lot of that is because I'm not going to use it long. I'm going to stick one elite with the Needler and then
and watch him explode and run on.
And then probably grab his plasma rifle. But I actually find it very useful, especially for short burst situations of, okay, I'm going to needle this guy and then move along.
It's more that it's just really satisfying to actually get the kill with it.
Satisfying, yes. Particularly useful, still no.
I tend to agree with that assessment.
It gets a lot better in 2. This is like one of the only things that got better in 2 was the Needler actually got more powerful because
and you could dual wield it.
The problem in Halo 1 with the Needler, the projectile's travel time is too long for it to be useful. The projectile's travel time is too long and it fires too slow. It is a rapid fire weapon that fires slowly and needs a lot of hits on target.
Yeah, and I definitely, one of the matches we played before recording, I definitely emptied a full clip at Zach, and he got like maybe 3 stuck in him, and then I was out of ammo, and then I died. So
so then let's talk about the enemies, because they're one of the major selling points of Halo. The enemy AI, it doesn't seem actually that much better to me than games that came a bit before, but it is very, very good. I don't actually think it's that much smarter than games that were shortly before it, but I think pretense isn't the right word. It appears much smarter than those games used to.
Well,
it's a lot better at making the enemies look like they're trying to take cover, make it look like they are trying to preserve themselves, make it look like they have a personality.
I love watching the grunts run away.
Well, each of the enemies has a behavior and set into it. Elites are very aggressive, and grunts and jackals will be aggressive as long as the elite is alive. And if you kill the elite, they will start to scatter. With jackals, they'll have a... I'm going to start from the beginning. Grunts are the smallest enemy you fight. They're also the second most dangerous enemy you can come across.
Because they have grenades.
Because they have grenades.
And later in the game, they have fuel rod cannons, which are basically alien rocket launchers.
And they explode when you kill them, which is why I can't pick them up. But so grunts are little guys. They tend to carry needlers and plasma pistols and throw grenades at you. I don't think they go suicide grunt in this game.
I never saw it, but I only played on normal. So it might just be a difficulty
thing. I don't remember seeing
it
on heroic, but... It might be something they added later. At the very least, sometimes, maybe not in this game, they'll just pop two grenades and run at you and explode. But then after them, like a slightly higher tier.
I feel like we should talk about grunts a little bit more. Because analyzing grunts, they exist to be enemies that feel good when you kill.
They are, you're going to fight a lot of them. A lot of them are going to be satisfying to take down.
And they're pusillanimous.
To use some wrestling terminology, they have really good heal maneuvers. Like Zach said, when their boss is around... They will attack. When they think they have the advantage, they will insult you. But when they don't, they will call you a demon and go running away. So
leader dead, run away!
So they have very satisfying behaviors that way. They also kind of exist as an ammo sink, but if you have the pistol, you can just headshot them, and that's the most effective way to take them out. And a lot of why I think this game is good is the enemies have very good, not weapon correlation exactly, but different weapons are very effective against different types of enemies. And I think the game designer gave you limited ammo with the intent that you would be switching weapons a lot.
Well, definitely everything drops a weapon when you kill it.
Yeah.
So.
But it's not necessarily a weapon that's good against it.
That is true.
So that's interesting. Then we go on to the jackals, which are kind of disappointing in this game. I don't think they have much identity.
They get better later, but in this game, they're really just the enemy with the shield. They're short. About the same size as grunts, so you're going to be popping them. Pistol's good against them because you got to hit the one unshielded location or just punch them in the face.
Yeah, I feel like melee is really the best.
They'll have a shield that will reflect most of your bullets. Not necessarily at you, but it will reflect shots. And they're similar to the grunts. Kill the leader and they'll start to scatter, but they don't have the same satisfying nature as the grunts. They don't talk. They don't really say anything.
I actually really like aiming for the one open spot, though. For some reason, that's like a really zen activity.
In later games, that becomes like the way you take down jackals. But in this game, I think it's because the pistol is just inaccurate enough that it becomes more of a hassle.
Good point.
Yeah, I remember that from later Halo games being very satisfying. I don't think it really works in this game.
The jackals are not quite there, but I like the fact that they're in the game because they are a different type of enemy to take down, and they do go down differently than grunts and elites do.
Honestly, I think jackals are the enemy I'd take if I had to take out an enemy, and honestly, if you just replace them with grunts, I don't think the game would be any worse. Maybe it would be visually a little, but...
The shields have bright colors.
The other thing that we didn't mention for grunts is grunts will actually climb into vehicles and turrets.
Yeah, and jackals won't.
That is true.
That's the other reason why they just don't do enough, which is why I like how in later games they gave them sniper rifles and carbines and stuff.
So then are like the five types of elites. Elites look the same. They just have different colors
you
of
have
armor.
Blue, maroon, white, black, silver, and gold. And I think there's only three gold elites in the game.
Yeah, that's about how I remember. Blue are the ones you see most often. They have one of the three Covenant weapons. They are just a smarter enemy with shields who are trying to kill you.
I don't think they carry pistols. I don't think
I've seen elites with
pistols. Okay, on the autumn, they had pistols at the very least.
I couldn't remember if any of the elites ever carried plasma pistols. They might not on heroic.
That's possible. They definitely do on normal, though.
I also don't pay that close of attention to what they're carrying.
Then there are the red ones, which are basically blue ones, but with more shields.
Yeah. They're a bit tougher. They act a little bit smarter. I don't know if they actually are, but sometimes they'll take cover more often than the blue ones will.
I found they were also more likely to go for melee attacks if I was in range. So the blue ones just kind of, like, continue to dance around me while I was punching them in the face. The red ones actually try to hit back, so.
Then you have the white ones, which cloak.
And are pretty dangerous because they usually have swords, or a lot of them have swords, which are instant kills.
Oh, that's right.
They don't on normal.
Oh, they don't?
No.
Okay, because I know on heroic, oftentimes they'll carry swords.
Which is why it's good there are frequent checkpoints.
Yeah, because I actually think the swords are kind of poorly designed in this game. But then next up is silver. They are like reds, but with even more hit points. And then the gold ones, which always have swords, and they have a lot more shields.
They are really tanky. They are kind of, I think, meant to feel a bit like a boss fight.
Yeah, but
I say meant to feel a little bit like it. They don't
fail. Really, most of them are kind of gotcha enemies. They're hiding behind corners, and that makes sense. Like, there's the one,
There's one
where you're on the bridge, and you're going along the bridge, and he, like, will hide behind, like, the end of the bridge and leap out. And then there's the one, like, where you open the door at the end of level 5, I think, and he will just fly out at you. There's a ton of enemies in there.
4. The thing is, you know he's there. All the way through there, you know he's there somewhere. You just don't know where. Because when you first go and they lock down that room, you can see him.
But you don't necessarily know he's a one-hit kill, right? You don't know what he is yet. One of my problems with this game is Tyler said he really liked the opening and how it explains everything. I feel like it's poorly tutorialized and, like, it doesn't, like, drop you in with a room with grunts and see you say, and let you say, oh, these are how these things operate. It kind of works out okay because of the frequent checkpointing. Dying is okay, similar to, like, Mega Man, that gives you a lot of lives to let you test out the platforming and be okay.
I don't know. I think in this case, it's more of a, you can see how he behaves when he approaches, because I remember the one on the bridge. He doesn't hide behind the wall. Every time I fought the Gold Elites, as soon as they see you or as soon as you get close, they charge you sword.
But you don't know it kills you in one hit.
It's a big glowing sword. Well, I ain't letting him get close to me. That's a natural behavior.
That's actually a pretty good point.
That is a good point. That is a good point.
He's coming at me to charge me. I'm backing away from him and not letting him do whatever he wants to do.
Or whipping at your shotgun.
I'm still not letting him get close to me. Shotgun's not a one-hit kill against
him. One hit. And
I probably don't have it because it's not level 6 yet.
Yeah, well.
Then are the Hunters, which I think are a bit more meant to be a boss fight.
I like the Hunters. They're fun.
They're much better in later games.
I don't know if I agree
with
that.
They're kind of a trap in this one.
Basically, you want to hit them in the back. That's a one-shot kill. They have a little weak spot. Oh, you can do it with a shotgun too if you're close enough.
Well, I mean, like precision weapons. Like I fought a couple of them without a pistol.
Ah.
And so I had like a assault rifle and a plasma rifle.
Okay.
I actually had to beat one to death.
So the best way to fight them though is to get them to this lunge move at you, which you can dodge out of the way. They're stuck in it and you can get behind them, which is very boss fight like. You're trying to lure them into their attack that makes them vulnerable while dodging their other attacks.
And they always come in twos.
Yep.
Every time you see a hunter, there's another one nearby.
So they can guard each other's backs, clearly.
The reason why I feel as though they fail in this game is because they're too simple to take down. They aren't a threat. I'm more afraid of coming across a single grunt than I am coming across two hunters.
I mean,
they're
not a
terribly easy to take down.
But there's that part, I think it is at, I can't remember what level it's on. It might be 7. It's the one where you're trying to overload all the generators. There's that part where there's like this snow battle. There are some flood right at the start. And then the Covenant have 2 tanks and a whole bunch of elites. And there are 2 hunters there. And like after you're exhausted fighting all the elites and everything, the hunters are in the back. And after you go through that like exhausting fight, they really feel like
You have to go through and pick up. You have to get into a Banshee?
Yeah.
Or you don't fight them.
Well, yeah.
And you just steal the Banshee.
I tried that and they shot the Banshee and exploded it.
I just stole the Banshee. Yeah, that can be a pain, but
his sneak skill is much higher.
I mean, I just got good enough that I had enough rockets that I could take out both tanks and still have a rocket launcher with the elites, or for the hunters. I mean, but that was a level where I had to go in, kill the flood with an assault rifle, take out some grunts with the pistol, go back to the weapon cache at the start, get the sniper rifle, get the rocket launcher, come back, take out the tanks, snipe the elites, and then kill the hunters, and then I was able to
get through it. I like that trade-off. You either make do with what you've got, or you make tracks back to where you can get what you think you need.
I kind of don't like it, but this isn't the time to talk about it right now. And, like, that is a good story that I just told. But I left off the part where I died for half an hour trying to beat the part and got frustrated. But anyway, that's all the Covenant enemies, right?
Yes.
So then you have the second group of enemies, the Flood, which are space zombies, except for that they will use weapons. So you've got like the base Spore version. They're not very dangerous at all. They do very little damage.
They can be dangerous if there are a lot of them at a time.
They're dangerous if your shields are down
They are dangerous if your shields are down, but usually if there is enough of them in a swarm and you're not paying attention, you walk into it. That's more of the problem with them is if you aren't paying attention to them If you get hit with a swarm, they will take your shields down on their own.
And then there seems to be like two kinds of flood. I couldn't really tell.
There are actually three. Because then you have, after the infection forms, you have the carriers, which are, they will trundle at you, fall over,
explode.
And explode.
Yeah, the exploding
one.
I
forgot about
I wasn't
those.
Counting them. I was going to count them afterwards. I meant there are like two combat forms wield weapons again. They will wield either human or Covenant weapons. One of them seems to like jump at you more. Like, I couldn't tell you what their names are.
They're a human and an elite.
Oh, okay.
That makes sense. Human and an infected elite.
It just seemed to me like they're what type they were didn't affect what weapon they carried. And
it doesn't.
I figured they would do that because like the infected elites don't really look like elites to me. It seemed to me like this was the next stage of infection.
They do, but you have to look because with the infected elite, the head is actually on the back.
Okay.
Like the head has actually fallen onto the back.
Which I thought was really cool when I first saw it.
Oh no, I think the flood are like the good part of this game. But
I don't think I noticed a difference in how many they would jump at you. But
it seemed like the elites jump at you and the
I feel as though there are more elite forms.
And then you have the last enemy is basically the Sentinels. They're these little flying monitor things with laser beams. They are very vulnerable to the plasma weapons or the shotgun if you can get close enough, but that's tricky because they fly.
Yeah, and usually if you can get a plasma rifle, you'll take them down in a couple of hits. They're not that strong against the thing.
But that means you have to carry a plasma rifle. And yeah.
A lot of times when they show up, you might just have a few dead elites lying around.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, in particular, I'll get to that later. Yeah, I actually really like the Sentinels. I feel like they feel very different from the others because like the Flood are different at first. But, like, the more you go on, the more they just become enemies. And you do, like, approach them differently, but...
A lot of backpedaling.
Yeah, well...
I remarked to Cody that it was a backpedaling. There was a lot more backpedaling in this game. Because your shields are actually... It feels a lot lighter in this game than they are in later games, so you can take fewer hits.
Yeah. You do have to go... I felt like I had to go into cover a lot more in this game than I remembered.
So that's the combat and the enemies and the weapons, which are this game's strengths. The combat is really revolutionary. It's really better than any first-person combat that came before, any that I played.
I played a lot of Quake, this is better than Quake.
There's a reason why people have basically been copying Halo's combat for a while, at least the core mechanic of the recharging health.
I think it's A, because people are lazy, and B, because it works well on consoles, which have become the dominant market, more than because it's really good. But it is... Good.
It works
partially.
In general.
It's revolutionary. Like it was so. It had such a cultural impact that you couldn't not copy it.
It lets you design encounters that are not contingent on previous encounters. In a Doom level, the entire level has to be a challenge. Halo, you're making a bunch of smaller challenges, which let them increase the intensity of each fight. But that's a kind of game, and I don't necessarily think it's right for every kind of game. When we did the Half-Life episode, I talked about how it was Die Hard. How you had to survive these falls and you had to go through. I don't really think you can recreate that sort of experience with regenerating health.
Nah.
No, because fighting with falling over a hill or falling down a pipe is
But imagine
boring.
Without fall damage.
No, well, I don't think it is
boring.
Then
it's
we'll
boring. Or then it has no challenge because the challenge in that game is entirely contingent on falling off of stuff.
Ration your health. And
It's about an ammo and... The individual fights in Half-Life, I think, are good, but they are not as good as they end up being in Half-Life.
10 different guns. I don't have to manage ammo. I have all of these guns sitting around.
Yeah, and when there are enemies that a specific gun is good for, you get to pull out that gun and feel cool.
Because you saved the ammo for it.
Anyway, like I was saying, this combat system is really, really good, but it's also all the game has. Unfortunately. It also has vehicles, which we didn't touch on.
The Flood are a cool concept.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to the Flood. It also has vehicles, and that was a major selling point for the game, because it's one of the first games that just includes vehicles. They were like set pieces before. This is the vehicle part, so you get in a vehicle. Whereas in Halo, they're a little more, it's emergent,
I guess.
I don't
want to walk, I'm taking your ghost.
I mean, and there are definitely problems with them. In particular, they couldn't get collision physics right. So if you nudge anything in a vehicle going at any speed, it dies. Like, the first time I got in a Jeep, my Marine was getting in, and then we went off a jump, and he kind of was on the underside of it, and he died. And
never seen that happen.
I feel really bad when I accidentally let the Marines die.
Yeah, but they're totally useless, but I want to save them because I'm supposed to be the hero.
They're really useful in Warthogs because they're actually pretty good shots.
Yeah, when they work her gun, they're useful, but that's about it. And they kept falling out for me, so.
You can fall out if the Warthog lands at an awkward position.
That was mostly, the game encourages you to go off jumps because the Marines are like, yeah, woo! But, physics make you go barrel rolling through them, and I always land turret side down.
It feels like you're going off the wrong jumps.
It's like the opposite of a cat. I don't know. They look like telegraph jumps for me. Anyway, I really think the vehicle sections are not very good.
The Marines were like, dude, you should totally hit that ramp.
Because the main vehicle, the Warthog, the gun is separate from the driver's seat, it makes sense, and it's really good in multiplayer. But it means you have to choose between driving, which is what you always do because the Marines can't, or gunning.
Not going anywhere and firing.
Yeah. And so, you're either ignoring the enemies or you're, not really going. And I really feel like the handling isn't there. The vehicles just don't feel right at all to me. Master Chief feels a little floaty because, he's really just a chest. But they do a much better job giving him the illusion of feeling than they do with the vehicles.
Actually, jumping back to combat mechanics, one of the things that I think really made this game stand out from other first-person shooters at the time to me was how agile you feel as the Chief, because he's fast.
Honestly?
And he jumps really high.
And he jumps high.
He does jump high. I feel the reverse, though, honestly. Really? I played Half-Life right after this to compare. Gordon Freeman feels so much faster. Honestly, too fast in certain points.
It feels like he doesn't have control over his speed.
And play Doom again. Because Doom, you are so much faster than the Chief. You can't jump, so
Doom
you're
felt
not as
really
mobile.
Slow to me.
No, you're really fast in Doom. I actually feel the Chief is a little slower. He's faster than the games that are going to come after, like Call of Duty. But Chief is a step down or a step slower, which I think is good for a console because it's a lot harder to strafe.
He controls a lot better than the previous guys.
So I was comparing it to Perfect Dark.
I think in part that's because he's slow. It gives you more handling.
Well, you can also, get into fist fights with people better than the other guys can.
That's true.
Is a mechanic we never actually mentioned.
Oh, you have melee.
It's
useful, but not as useful as it's going to be.
If you punch people in the back, they die.
Getting rid of grunts, sometimes you just walk up to them and punch them in the face.
So let's talk about this game's campaign. It's 10 levels. If you really, really like the combat, you're going to like this game. But it is all the game has. Tyler has brought up differences in kind versus differences in scale before. Whereas a difference in scale is this thing gets harder. A difference in kind is I'm doing a different thing. This game is pretty good at doing differences in scale. It has almost no differences in kind.
Yeah,
that's
arguably true.
The game has basically four things you're doing. You're in combat. You're walking to the next combat, potentially lost. I often got lost in this game. If you know where you're going, you won't. And that's really frustrating if you're lost because you're bored and you know what's going to happen next. There's driving to the next fight, which is better than being lost, but is not really fun. It's just, hey, let's go to the next shooting hole on the murder golf course. Or there's watching cutscenes.
I scored par.
And I really don't think the cutscenes are very good.
Although I was surprised at how poor the animation was in the cutscenes in this, because I remembered it being really good. Watching
Golden.
I think that's a little unfair of it. The graphics are excellent for the time it comes out.
Oh, definitely. Just the motion in the cutscenes of some of the characters is really jerky for no apparent reason.
What really gets me is the voice acting is so bad. And then I remembered, this game came out a month after Final Fantasy X. Ha 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 ha. Maybe it's good. And then I remembered it's 3 years after Metal Gear Solid. And I kind of lost my sympathy.
Metal Gear.
I mean, you can make fun of Metal Gear Solid because it's easy, but the emotional moments of that game work, and they only work because the actors do it right.
No, I've never actually played Metal Gear Solid, so.
Seemed fine to me. They all have distinct differences in those personalities.
Really? Do you think so? Because
yeah, I had no problems with it.
Who are you supposed to sympathize? What character do you sympathize with in this game?
Cortana.
Really? Because as things I know about Cortana. She used to have fingers. She knows where Earth is. And I feel like that's kind of it. She's a dick to the Chief. She won't tell him anything.
Yeah, but they have an implied backstory, right?
It doesn't feel that way to me.
How does it not feel that way to you?
It doesn't feel like they even know each other. It feels like when they put Cortana in the back of his head, it feels like they're meeting for the first time to me. Maybe because I'm meeting her for the first time.
They have a back and forth before they even did that. It was like a good back and forth.
Because he walks onto the thing, greets Captain Keyes, they do their greeting,
and then Cortana starts turns around and goes, sniping.
Yeah. Have a night. It's like, did you not sleep well or something like that? And Chief responds with, no thanks to your driving.
And the Chief is basically like,
okay.
Stop being a dick.
The problem is that comes off dry to me. It feels like two actors with no charisma. That just, maybe it's me, that just absolutely doesn't work for me.
I'm not
a big fan. Back and forth. It just like, it seems like, I mean, it seems like probably more bad directing than bad voice actors, but it seems like they're talking past each other in a way that they're going for that rapport, but I don't think they succeed with it. Because like what I hear is, oh, I'm Cortana. I shot down the proper noun with only a proper noun. And
with only a proper
noun.
It
seemed fine to me because you get if you watch the first couple of cutscenes, you actually get quite a bit from Cortana what's going on in the current situation and, you know, what's happening, how many Covenant fighters and stuff you've actually been going on before the Chief woke up. And then you also get the Chief, who's originally a Lens character, and he has, obviously, he's portrayed as more of a dry character, so he's going to sound more deadpan and
dry. Well, it establishes that he has history, but you don't know it.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I don't sympathize with any of the characters. Like, Captain Keyes, like...
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Keyes.
And I have to rescue him twice. Like, really, that's one of my biggest problems with the game, is why are we rescuing Captain Keyes? Why... I mean, we're sacrificing a lot of Marines we just spent time saving to get this guy. And, like, give me a reason. If the reason's the Chief is a good guy and he wants to save his friend, I'm okay with that reason. If the reason's Cortana has analyzed that we have a better chance to survive with Captain Keyes, I'm okay with that reason. If it's Captain Keyes knows where Earth is and we want to save him to make sure he doesn't tell the Covenant, I'm okay with that reason. But the reason is just, it's time to save Captain Keyes now. Let's go save Captain Keyes.
They tell you why.
I actually don't remember the reason. What
on
is the
first level, or not the first level, the second level.
That's the one where you save him.
No, that's the third level.
Is it? Okay, well. Oh, you're right. You're right.
While you're driving around, a lot of the times they tell you what you're doing in the next level by referencing stuff in the second level. Cortana actually says we can start actually fighting back if we rescue Captain Keyes.
But see, why?
Yeah, exactly.
He's in why the do you think he's in charge? He's in command. You establish a chain of command. No one's in charge.
But you have a master chief.
Yeah, like
he's a petty officer. He's not a commanding officer.
Okay, but like, why can't the Maverick guy like take charge? That doesn't seem important to me. Honestly, it doesn't. I mean, you can establish a reason, but that doesn't seem like a very good one to me.
I would agree. That's not a strong
especially
reason.
When we just spent all this time saving Marines and they're now dying by the droves. Going in to kill Captain Keyes. It's just really dissonant to me.
They're trying to save Captain Keyes, not kill him.
Okay. You know, that's what I meant. And, like, we know so little about the Covenant. Like,
but they're driving warthogs to
him.
They're trying to kill
him. Trying to kill us, so that is a problem. But, like, at this point, what we know about the Covenant, they will take prisoners. That, it just, the stakes don't seem well established to me. Until we get to level 6, which I almost gave up on this game so many times before level 6. And I'm pretty glad I didn't, because suddenly the game shifts gears into this almost survival horror thing as it introduces the Flood, and it does a really good job atmospherically telling the story. Suddenly, like, it's been really bad with these cutscenes, I feel, at establishing stakes and characters, but all of a sudden you're going in this creepy building, there are no bad guys, all you see is, like, the corpses of guys you've had a tough time fighting.
Well, you know why level 6 works so well like that, right?
There's a huge change of pace.
Basically, you've been spending the entire game as you have trying to beat to death
fighting the Covenant.
Built on combat. And level 6 is you fight the Covenant like twice.
Yeah, you fight them a couple times going in.
And then you get into the facility and
suddenly everything stops.
Nothing.
But there are still corpses.
There are corpses, but nothing else. And sometimes you'll actually pick stuff up on your motion tracker, but there's not anything there,
which is really creepy.
I agree it works because it's a change, but I feel like they took too long to get to the good stuff. Because if we weren't playing this for an assignment, if it wasn't a game you loved, Zach, I would have given up on it because I had been bored with it by that point. That change is really good. It really works. It makes a really interesting level. But then, like, I feel like it loses it after that. Even the end of the level has really good storytelling in-engine, because you see the Flood have escaped this place you were fighting them, because they're outside now.
Which sucks.
And you see the Sentinels for the first time fighting the Flood. And that all really works, and it's a really good way of telling the story. But then you're sort of hijacked by Guilty Spark, and Cortana doesn't tell you anything. And then you get to the level that's just opening 10 doors.
Cortana's not even there.
Yeah, but she sent you there, and didn't tell you why, and... that really doesn't work for me. I mean, it's the Star Trek problem of, what have we got down their bones? Oh, Captain, you better come see for yourself. Commercial break! It's the same thing, except for, like, there's no reason not to just tell Kirk, hey, this is what happened, except for Kirk needs to be on the scene so he can act. But, like, you don't even have that in this. She's only telling you, not telling you, so you don't figure it out as the player. And you get that cool reveal. I think it's too bad that they show you the flood in the cutscene before you actually fight them. I don't know if it would work better the other way around. I think it's well done. I did just praise the level a lot. But I kind of think if you had that, like, fight where they're all flooding in, and you fell back somewhere, and then you saw what happened to Sergeant Johnson and Private Jones... that might
Jenkins.
Work Jenkins, that's what it is. That might work better. I'm not sure. I would just be curious
in
about...
In my opinion, the reason why it works much better is because you walk in, you know, you get the cutscene of them all going through, and then, you know, you kind of... They're all standing around, and at least the first time I played this level, because I already knew it was going to happen, obviously, since I played the game before, you see, like, okay, well, this is happening. Wait a minute, hang on. I think I just went into this room.
Okay, yeah, that is a problem. You're right.
And then they all start showing up.
But, you know, in movies and books, you show, don't tell. In games, there's a common thing that you should do not show. And I kind of feel like the encounter might work better if you have no context for it. Whereas you know, oh, crap, these are the things that killed those guys. You do know them a little bit.
It establishes anticipation, though.
But I feel like the level does that well enough on its own with the dead
that's a good point.
Elites and such. And that is a, you know, a good fight. It's really intense. It throws a lot of enemies at you. And I'm not sure. Like I said, it might work better the way it is, but my instinct would be to flip it.
Well, and then right after that, they introduce the first combat forms, and it's a matter of, what the hell is this going on? And then later in the level, they get guns. The first two you fight don't have guns.
I think it really works. My problem is then on the next level, you spend like an hour just fighting them, and like going through these doors, and when Guilty Sparks, yeah, there are 10 more doors like this. I'm like, really? Because I think 2 is too many for this level.
You realize that the library is one of the most disliked levels in the game.
Okay, and that's fair, because it's one of my least favorite levels.
It was one of my least favorite levels, and then I replayed it, and I went, damn, this actually is a lot better design than I thought it was, or I remember it being.
My problem with the library, really, is the momentum it kills. Because the first, like, 5 levels of Halo, I didn't hate them. But they were just too much of the same to me. And when I got little variations, when I got a tank battle, because there's one in there and that's cool, or I got a really hard fight in front of a door, that was cool, but for the most part it was just going and killing Covenant. So then when the Flood show up, it's something different, and I think the library just kills it. I think the library really just makes it, okay, now I'm just fighting Flood. And after that you fight Flood and Covenant, but it doesn't really feel right for level 8, which is the level where I had that cool story I told earlier about having to go back for the sniper rifle. But then level 9, I think the stakes are bad and the story kind of just does a thing. Like, the story just needs there to be another level. So it's like, go rescue Captain Keyes. Oh, wait, it didn't matter. Also, you failed. And the thing didn't matter in the first place. But that's neither here nor there. Because level 9 is really well laid out. It's like a really good progression. It is just fighting, but it's done really well. The narrow corridors funnel you really well. It's a better designed level than the previous ones. And then level 10 is honestly one of the best made levels in a video game I've ever played. But that's because it's changing stuff up constantly. It starts with narrow corridor fights, then you get wider fights. Then you get basically a boss battle where you're fighting a whole bunch of Flood while trying to get to different locations and throw grenades in reactor ports.
That's honestly one of my favorite parts of any game ever. Just
or you ignore
scene.
The Flood, get the rocket launcher and blow up the smart way.
Well, that's choice, though. And either way, that's a good scene. And then you have an escape on a Jeep, and like I said, the stakes before I think are really poorly explained, but here you're responsible for the explosion. Midway through it does something that raises the stakes, and like when you escape, it feels like your team won the Super Bowl. Like it feels like you and Chief got out of there, and it's really, really good. And so I'm glad I played all the way through this game, but I feel like just playing level 6, probably level 1 because that gives you context, and maybe level 2 because I wasn't
like
bored
the
by the end
too.
Of level 2. But, like, levels 6, 9, and 10 are really where this game shines. But
how long is this game overall? Like, 8 hours-ish?
Yeah, about probably about 8 hours. Yeah.
Depending on individual ham-handedness and dying.
Yeah.
What
difficulty you're playing on.
It was taking me about an hour a level, but the first level is really short, and the last level is shorter, too.
The library, I think, is the longest. Oh, it's either the library or Assault on the Control Room. So, depending on whether or not you managed to hijack the Banshee.
Speaking
did
of...
Did you hijack the Banshee? I'm trying to remember. I think I did. Like, I'm trying to remember which it's all on the control room is.
It's the fifth level.
Okay. I think I did.
It's where it has the tank.
Yeah, yeah. I might not have, because I remember the tank part. And like, the fifth level, I think, works because of the tank part, because that's a breath of fresh air.
Tank beats everything.
I think that tank part is just a little too short, because they
It is a little
take
short. I wish you could
that part
use
away
the tank
from
more.
You.
So really quickly, do they ever explain why the Covenant is destroying humanity?
In the instruction booklet.
Okay.
That's one of my major problems with the story, is they have... The backstory is in the instruction booklet, and, like, that's okay for a game, but, like, in 2001, I feel like you should establish more of your story in-game. Well, and like, really, the bit in the instruction booklet would work as a Star Wars-style text crawl. And, like, this game is taking inspiration more from Alien than Star Wars, but it's taking from some from Star Wars, and so that might get the tone right. It might be a little too Star Wars, because this is not nearly as high adventure.
And... In this game, or this type of game, I don't feel it's necessary. But the point is, no. They're shooting at you. The rest of it, why are they shooting at me? I don't really care. They're shooting at me.
I do, because, like I said, I get bored in this game, and I think like level 9 and 10 work for me because my objectives and the stakes are clear.
My
like
thing
I said,
is that it's a cool universe, and I want to know more about it.
See, and
so.
I think that's why this game did so well, is it's a cool universe. People want to read novels and play sequels, but it doesn't work for me, and I don't know why. I think a lot of it is the establishing of stakes. I think if I had read that intro before starting the game and just had a lot more context, I had some of it just from playing future Halo games and, you know, the fact that Halo is such a big cultural force, I knew stuff. But, like, it never uses the word Spartan in the entire game.
That is very true.
And, like, that's just weird. Like, you, why is Master Chief important?
Yes, it does.
Where?
Keyes refers to him as a Spartan a couple of times.
Okay, I don't recall
But do you have any context for it? Like, you don't know what that is. They certainly never say, hey, you're a cool cyborg and the Covenant are scared of you. You do get that a little with Covenant, like, calling you a devil
and
fleeing
from you.
And
running away from you.
But you won't necessarily, like,
because
get
you think
that
that's just
dialogue.
Because you're a badass. So.
Yeah. It never tells you why the Covenant are attacking people. Like I said, all I knew about the Covenant until I tracked down the instruction booklet to read it was...
They're aliens.
That they're willing to take prisoners.
They're aliens! So why are the Covenant attacking people? Because I at plain...
They are a religious alliance. All the different aliens have the same religion. Their Pope declared humans were demons and heretical, and they needed to be exterminated.
Oh... Okay, and they just bought that?
Yeah, it's a little weird, but, like, going back to Zax, they're shooting at me, so it's okay. That's enough of a justification to me.
Grunts aren't very smart. I would believe them going for that. So,
and, like, the elites end up, you know, spoilers for Halo 2, sort of going against it and breaking off from the Covenant and allying with the humans.
In Halo 2 and 3, you're actually working with most of the elites. You don't really get any alone. The elites are helping you.
You do play as the Arbiter in one of them.
But even like going back to the stakes thing, like spoiler, Halo destroys life in a giant radius. I have no idea what that radius means. In the same way that psychologically humans don't really understand what $1 million is. It's like 25,000 light years or something.
50.
What does that mean? Is Earth in that range? I don't know. We have faster than light travel. Could be, could not be.
That's roughly the size of the Milky Way.
Yeah, yeah. They refer to the galaxy, but are we in the Milky Way?
He also refers to the fact that all life will be purged from the universe because all the
other
rings...
I think he says galaxy.
Whatever. All the other rings will trigger at the same time when the signals...
But again, is Earth in that range? Because I don't know. And like, the more I play, the more...
It's heavily implied.
Yeah,
I think Cortana says Earth will be destroyed.
I think it does eventually, but it's just it is a weird stakes thing. I mean, like, yes, that's something I want to avoid regardless. But, like, often I don't understand the stakes.
Find out the stakes that it will destroy it. She mentions Earth is in the radius. Like,
she does actually explicitly mention that.
Yeah, it specifically does mention Earth will be...
And the chief is like, Earth!
Well, and are human colonies outside of that? Probably not, because the Covenant are destroying them. But we never really are told that, except in the instruction booklet.
But you don't really
need to
know
that. And so, like, if that killed the Covenant and didn't kill...
Don't they say that you were fleeing a lost... battle in the first cutscene?
Yeah.
That's
they do
explicit.
Reference that, yeah, although, we were losing a fight.
Presumably yes. Nowhere near Earth, because otherwise they would have destroyed it.
No, but Reach.
Actually, they do specifically mention Reach. I'm
but
like,
you have
aha!
No idea what Reach means, because in 2001, that's a proper noun. It's not even necessarily a planet.
I assumed it was a place.
Yeah,
that's
no, definitely a place. That's, assumable.
You but just like, needed to know it was a place that we were protecting, and we lost.
And I mean, I just think context would help. If you said the Covenant are crazy religious aliens, and they've been hunting humans across the galaxy, and they're winning, like, that's so much. And then if you go on to, you know, humans made the Spartans, and they were fighting back and winning, but all of them except Master Chief are dead, like, that's a hook. You can get on with that. And I think the characters are unlikable, but you guys don't agree with that, so...
I like Cortana. I like the Chief all right.
I like Cortana and the Chief.
I don't dislike...
I like Keyes, but that's because I have more context for Keyes.
Yeah.
Just with this game, I wouldn't... I'd probably not like Keyes because he doesn't have as much of an appearance.
Like, I like his
that's
pipe.
That's always getting in trouble. Yeah, his pipe on the bridge for no reason is pretty cool, but... My problem is more Cortana, because I don't mind the Chief being mostly a lens. I mostly don't like the Chief either, but I'm not upset that I don't like the Chief. Story-wise, lots of video games have this problem. When we talked about Chrono Trigger, I talked about how video game stories are terrible. Nobody has an arc in this game. Nobody develops at all from the start of this game to the end of this game, except for Keyes, who develops into someone who is dead.
Your picture developed. It's dead.
I guess Foehammer also develops into someone who is dead. Spoilers. So,
okay, but I mean,
I wish Foehammer had a bigger appearance in the game, but that's also because I wish I could control a pelican.
Yeah, well, that would have been cool because that would have been a different thing you could do. And the reason why I get bored and fail in this game is just the combat is fun for a while, but it's not fun for an hour. And like I said earlier, the levels are about an hour long, so I'm not really getting a break. You can save and quit at any time, but like, no particular time feels like it's time to save and quit, other than level breaks.
Honestly, I feel like it does a good job making me want to continue playing, because I don't. It doesn't ever feel like there's a good stopping point, and I think that's good for telling to continue his story.
I suppose that's true, other than
and
the levels. And
the combat doesn't bother me. You have problems with first-person shooters to begin with.
Yeah, but like I said, I started playing through Half-Life to try and compare it. Half-Life, I never know what's coming. Half-Life is more fun to me because of that. The combat in Halo is better. I can't deny that. I wouldn't even try. But in Half-Life, I don't know if in the next room there's going to be a new type of alien or a platforming puzzle or like a weird appearance from the G-Man or a scientist telling me what I should do next or if I'm going to rocket into space or if I'm going to go into a shark tank and fire tranquilizers out. I mean, none of those are individually as good as Halo's combat, but they add up to a better experience for me. I want to know what's around the next corner in Half-Life. And I know what's behind the next corner in 90% of Halo.
I can solve what's around the next corner in Half-Life. A ladder you're going to fall off and take unrecoverable damage from.
Well, in Halo, it's Covenant who are going to kill me.
But you recover your health, essentially.
Well, but also, like I said, I got lost in Halo.
I'm still not entirely certain how you get lost in this game.
I got lost in Half-Life, too, so.
I got lost more in Half-Life, and there was a lot more parts where there wasn't anything going on because I had to backtrack through a bunch
of crap. I definitely got lost more in Halo.
Yeah,
how do you get lost? You go whichever direction you're getting shot at from.
Specifically the third level. There's, like, the big underground complex. Maybe it's the last part of the second level.
One of the reasons Halo's graphics are so good and they can make levels so big is they do a lot of copy-paste environments. And they do a good job of hiding it because they don't put two identical rooms next to each other. But it makes it easy to get lost. And most times in Halo, you come in a door and you leave in a door on the opposite side. In Half-Life, you will come in through a pipe and you'll exit out a door. You'll come through a door and you'll exit out up a ladder on the stairs. Half-Life is really...
What level did you get lost on the most?
I don't know. I got lost on 4 and 5 a lot. And 3 a fair bit. 9 a little bit. 9, I was mostly able to move forward because it has those contained corridors. I just got lost a lot until
later. You didn't
later
follow levels. The directions on the floor, did you?
I tried to, but the thing is...
There are arrows on level 5 okay. That tell you where to go.
The problem with that is there are arrows in the Pillar of Autumn that tell you to go into the doors that don't open. So I kind of got in the habit of just ignoring this. Because in the Pillar of Autumn, the arrows are not where you want to go.
Yeah, I learned pretty quickly to ignore them, and then I followed them again on later levels. So.
And then you just reverse it when you're going backwards through the level. You follow the reverse of the arrows.
Whichever one you first get the Warthog on, though.
That's Halo.
No, that's the second level. Is that Halo?
Yeah, the level's
called Halo. I got lost on that level, too. And, like, that also has a weird thing
okay,
where
that
like,
one
let's go save
is
some Marines. Oh, we're going under this tunnel for reasons
that one
that
is more
really
free-roaming.
Sense.
That one I can kind of understand. I was able to do it just because I know that you go to the blinky lights. That's where you're going.
And
they're marked.
I think
you just don't necessarily know what those mean.
I think being lost in Half-Life is less frustrating. I know it is for me because there are things where how do I get through this room is the gameplay. Whereas in Halo... how do I get through this room with no enemies is never what the intended experience is.
I guess if I ever got lost in Halo, it might be frustrating because there's nothing in here for me to kill.
Or find. Like, in Half-Life, if you go the wrong way, usually that means you find ammo or health.
So or you get a weapon little, sometimes.
So you get a little reward for exploring. Halo, you never get anything for going the wrong way.
I don't. Because it's almost impossible on most levels to actually go the wrong way.
Yeah, but in the middle of a firefight, I occasionally get turned around. So I go back the way I came, because the way I came looks the same to me as the way I went. Even on the very first level, ended up wandering to the end of a dead-end corridor 3 times because I kept going out of the corridor saying, oh, hey, there's a grunt, I should kill it. Go down that hallway and then end up getting back to exactly where I was because it was just a straggler.
And, level 9, there are 2 or 3 doors that will open, and all that's on the other side is 3 doors that won't open. I'm like, why does the first door even open? There's nothing to do there except
cover.
Try the 3 different doors and find out, oh, no, this isn't the way. Which way did I come from?
The one time I got turned around on this game was level 9. But that's because they have it. They have a point implemented where you're running above in the hangar. You're running above a bunch of people. They have a door that will open and let you back in. I got turned around and actually went down to the bottom level of that. But, because, again, following the traditional Halo, where do I go? Which way am I being shot at from? I got turned around and down that way. Then instantly went, oh, wrong way. And then turned around and went back the way I was supposed to be going because it's not that hard to pay attention and figure out where you're going.
Well, I mean, one, it's not hard for you, and that's great for you. That's probably why you like this game so much. But two, more importantly, is I always know what I'm going to find next. It's going to be a fight with the Covenant and or the Flood. I just find the surprise of Half-Life a lot more interesting and engaging. I'm never really bored in Half-Life. I always want to see what's next.
I was bored from basically minute one.
Yes, and I found Half-Life way more engaging immediately. That said, overall, I probably enjoy Halo more, so we can talk about that when we rate them.
I was going to say, this is already the longest episode we've ever done. We'll see with editing. Let's go ahead and skip ranking games for today.
Indeed.
We'll do that next week.
So. Also, this game had local multiplayer.
Yeah,
it was fun. Cooperative and competitive.
The co-op is really good for this game. I think that's part of one of the things this game has over Half-Life from a peer marketing standpoint is how easy it is to share. Both in that console games are just easier to share than PC games.
And
the
fact
that it has...
And you can sit down on a couch with a buddy and play?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that might make that buddy think, hey, I should get an Xbox in this game. And then realize, oh no, this is the only game on Xbox. It's a trap.
Next Soul's actually pretty good. It's just...
It's a tarp.
It had some problems that not a lot of people actually picked it up. And a lot of people who have played Battletech hated it.
Yeah, the multiplayer is great. Like, all of the problems I have with the single player just don't apply to the multiplayer.
You have those moments where you back away from a kill and a warthog goes flying past you and never...
That last level in particular, if you're making video games, you should study how that one works. Because it's really well designed.
It is a pretty sweet game.
A part of why it's good is also you're going back to the start of the level and that has a nice wraparound.
It kind of closes the loop. You start on the Pillar of Autumn and you end the game on the Pillar of Autumn.
But honestly, my final thoughts for this game are play level 1, maybe play level 2 if you like it, play level 6, play level 9 if you like it, and then play level 10.
Although, if you haven't played it before, you have no choice but to play all of them, so...
Well, I would say use cheats. I don't think this game has cheats.
It doesn't.
Or have a roommate who has already played it and just do level select.
Honestly, I think it's worth playing through the entire thing at least once. It's a fun game.
It's
entertaining.
It's the best shooter that we've played so far.
That's... Yep.
I think
it understands what it is.
I think Half-Life is a better experience, but that's me.
What are we playing next week?
Well, since we played such a big, long excitement, I think we're going to do 2 really quick ones and play the 2 Game Boy launch titles we haven't played, Alleyway and Baseball.
Didn't we already play Baseball?
We played Baseball for the NES. This be Baseball for the Game Boy, fool.
Oh, fantastic.
Mario and Luigi are your pitchers.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was just entirely coincidental.
So, next time on Last Time, it's Game Boy World.
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games, copyright 2015. All the games, movies, and other media mentioned in the show are copyright their respective owners, in case that wasn't obvious. Past episodes, articles, and other information can be found at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to contact us, send an email to ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to find us on Twitter, We are at LTOVG. We can also be found on iTunes. If you wanted to help us out, we would really appreciate if you left us a 5-star review. No extra lies were lost in the recording of this podcast.